Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 56 of NBA Unwrapped. This is Perry Astin, joined by Corbin Waterman. What's going on, buddy?
Hey, glad to be on again. Another exciting episode coming up.
And we have a special guest today, Matt Babcock. We'll intro him in a second. Just wanted to list some things for you before we get started. Where you can listen to us, you can listen to us on Anchor, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Breaker, Pocket Casts, and Radio Public. So almost anywhere that you listen to podcasts, you can find NBA Unwrapped now, which is amazing. So happy about that. And on Twitter, you can follow us at NBA Unwrapped. You can follow me personally at Perry Astin. You can follow Corbin at Corbin Unwrapped, or you can follow our network site at Unwrapped Sports. You can also follow our special guest at Matt Babcock 11. And thank you to our sponsors at Yamble Sports and Sportscaster, two amazing apps that if you don't have them yet, you definitely should. I don't know what you're doing. So Yamble and Sportscaster, thank you so much for everything that they're doing with us. You need to go download those immediately. So let's intro our special guest today, Matt Babcock, owner and founder of Babcock Hoops, co-owner of Pro Insight, a scouting database. It's a ton of stuff on your resume. I know you were formerly with Sports Illustrated in the past, and I know you have had a ton of awesome accolades in your career. So thank you so much for joining us, Matt. We're so proud to have you on and want to give the floor to you to kind of tell our listeners a little bit about what you do, what's present in the life of Matt Babcock nowadays.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys. Just to kind of give you an outline of where I'm at in my career. So, I worked as a NBA agent for, 10, 11 years. Got out of that business almost 2 years ago now. And, I've done some stuff in the media, like you mentioned, with Sports Illustrated. I launched Babcock Hoops earlier this year, which we do different articles, draft coverage, pretty much just, really just create a platform, just to do a bunch of cool stuff all within basketball. Just recently, my partner of mine and I, we are putting together a startup called Pro Insight that you mentioned. It's essentially serves as a scouting database for college teams and NBA teams. We're just a group of guys that will have experience, me as an NBA agent and, a couple other guys as NBA scouts, and really just trying to create a product to help teams and give them all the information they need on prospects.
That's amazing. Yeah. So I was interested to hear about your years as an agent. I know I have a few questions for you as well. I know I'm sure Corbin does. Yeah. I had a quick Q&A and let our listeners know about your life and everything you've done with hoops. I think it's awesome. So I'm going to start with where you said it started with, being an agent. Any big name players that really stood out to you throughout your career that you had a good time, representing, or anyone, any interesting stories that you may have throughout your years in the NBA?
Yeah, sure. I started the agency business really young, and I bounced around a little bit working for big companies. I worked with Wasserman, I worked with Excel, I worked with ASM Sports. I've dealt with a lot of different players and big names and whatnot. I think the most interesting guy I've dealt with is we represented Ron Artest. Obviously now met a world peace. I really have countless stories about him. He's a good guy. He's sort of everything you would expect. Just a lot of personality there.
I bet. Just really quickly, staying with the agency stuff, what advice would you give any of our listeners that are maybe looking to eventually transition into the agency business?
Don't do it. No, just kidding. I mean, it is a very cutthroat business, yeah. Which is one reason I decided to get out of it. It just kind of wore me out, to be honest with you. It's, the movie Jerry Maguire, I mean, really hits the nail on the head. it's just, you're having to recruit these players, you're having to manage them, and there's a lot of egos, a lot of big personalities, and, and there's a lot of highs and there's a lot of lows. It's just a very, very much like an emotional roller coaster of a career. It's like I said. I had some really great experiences in that business, but I had some negative ones too. It's a lot of highs. The advice I would give people looking to go in that industry is just do your homework and maybe self reflect a little bit if it's the right kind of business for that specific person.
Right. No, I totally understand what you're saying. I understand how with that business. I think it looks very glamorous, but once you get behind the scenes, like you said, very cutthroat, I'm sure very hard to handle in regards to all the egos and all the personalities and the constant grind. Because even with off season, you know, with the question I had for you, what did an off season look like for an agent? Just, I know it's probably a lot of snoozing and a lot of networking and you reaching out to clients that you, I'm sure, have and are trying to get, but what is the recipe to having a good summer as an agent for an off season? Like, what was your regimen in regards to getting prepped for the next season?
Yeah, sure. I mean, really, you know, the off season is the agent's actual season. Right. I mean, during the year, I mean, the players are playing. I mean, you travel around doing some recruiting and, you know, servicing your players. But the, you know, what we're getting paid for, you know, on paper is really the negotiations of contracts, finding guys' teams. And so, I mean, really, you know, really where it kicks off is, you know, when the college season ends, you know, you're recruiting rookies for that year's draft and you get into, you know, pre-draft mode, which is the busiest part, you know, of an agent's job. And then that leads right into, you know, you finish the draft and you jump right into free agency. And then, you know, NBA free agency. And then if you're representing players overseas, I mean, that stretches out till, you know, deep into August or even September.
Right.
You know, so yeah, the off season is, that's the hectic time. And, you know, pretty much as an agent every year, you know, I get through NBA free agency, get through international free agency. And, you know, once all these players are kind of, you know, going out to their teams and starting training camp, that's when I'd go on vacation and chill out a little bit. And so, it, yeah, it really is a flip-flop of, you know, off-season is the busy time for an agent.
Right. Another question I have, this, I guess, getting away from the agency side. I know when you transitioned out of that, you said you hit a lot of different stops in the media world. What kind of led you to Babcock Hoops, and what's it all about? What are you trying to do with Babcock Hoops? I'm just very interested, of course, with your own personal brand, you now branching off and branding something under yourself. I'm just curious what got you there and what your goals are for that.
Yeah, what happened was, I mean, to step back a little bit deeper in my background, so I grew up in a basketball family. My dad, my two uncles have all worked in the NBA, you know, for a long time. So I kind of grew up on that side of things and, you know, sort of just fell into the agency business. And, you know, it was kind of thing where I just had decided I didn't want to be an agent anymore. I wanted to do something else, you know, within basketball, a little bit more directly basketball related. And so what I did is, I started scouting for Marty Blake and Associates. It was originally a scouting service that was put together by the NBA years ago. And so I did that for them, just, you know, get, you know, kind of diving into college scouting. And I liked it. You know, I knew that, you know, regardless of what I was going to do, you know, long term, I wanted to evaluate players. I wanted to cover the draft. You know, I wanted to be able to be involved on that level. And it just one thing led to another with that experience is, you know, I started doing, you know, people, you know, got wind of me getting out of the agency business. So I started getting interview requests, and Sports Illustrated approached me about writing a series of articles about my time as an agent. And it's just, you know, all those experiences kind of led me to, you know, the idea of launching Babcock Hoops and kind of having control, you know, what I'm doing. Right. Now I've got pro insights, and now I've got a lot going on, and I'm really, you know, really doing a bunch of stuff that I'm passionate about, which is pretty awesome.
That's fantastic. And for us, you know, the question that I have now is, you know, for the scouting thing that you told me about, and now I hear that you were really loving the college hoops side of everything. What excites you about college hoops coming into next season? I know with Zion and so many big names coming out last year, there was probably a lot to cover in regards to scouting and a lot of big names that have the potential to be transcendent that we haven't really seen in a while. So I'm curious if there's anything that stands out to you in particular about this college season or maybe this class coming in or anything like that that really triggered any interest for you.
Yeah, well, you know, this last year, you know, was an interesting draft. I mean, really top to bottom, I didn't think it was a very good draft. Knox against Zion, you know, which is one of the bigger names we've had, you know, in recent years. And then John Morant was an interesting one too, you know, coming from a small school. Outside of that, I thought it was, you know, somewhat underwhelming. I think this next year's draft class is going to be better. You know, I don't know if they'll necessarily be, you know, another Zion, but, you know, more depth, a ton of great guards. This thing, I mean, Nico Mannion, Cole Anthony, there's several, international players that are going to probably do big time. Yeah, no, we're looking forward to, you know, getting this season started and get going, and it should be a pretty good draft.
Yeah, I mean, you got me excited for the next draft for sure. let's move on to just covering some of the stuff that's been happening in the NBA recently. So start off with free agency. Just curious, we'll start with you, Matt. Best and worst moves from the NBA offseason.
This year's free agency was pretty nuts. That's insane. There's so many big names, so many big deals. I'm gonna be sort of predictable here, but I mean, you got to go with the Clippers, Lakers, and Nets. I mean, adding some of the best players in the league. I mean, it's just no brainer answer. For me on that one.
Right.
As far as worst moves, I don't know. There's nothing really stood out as being just like a horrible deal. I'm curious to see how Horford ends up working out in Philly. It's a pretty big deal for a guy that's deep into his, pretty good into his 30s.
Right.
And you put him, with Embiid, so you got two more like traditional, big body, big guys. I don't know. Are you going to play them together all the time? Is it going to be more of like Horford supplements? Embiid, give him some time off, which they're careful with him and all that. That's why I don't want to go on a limb and say it was a bad deal. I'm curious to see how it works out, though. If that makes sense.
Yeah. No. I would somewhat agree on that. I think the contract in a vacuum isn't necessarily a bad deal. It's a little bit more than I would have wanted one of my favorite teams to pay him, but I was expecting him to get a contract around that value. It was more just like you said, the fit next to Embiid. The plus side for the Sixers is just now Embiid doesn't have to go up against Horford, because Horford seemed to be the only big man in the East that could actually stop him. But yeah, I'm curious, just like you, to see how that fits together just in a league that values positionless basketball and so much small ball, for the Sixers to essentially go the other way, move Tobias Harris, right, who is their starting four, to their starting three, bring in a traditional starting five into the starting four position. Right. It'll be interesting to see. It could go well for them. It also could go pretty disastrously poorly as well. I think for me, the only deal that really stood out as, wow, that's a pretty bad deal, was the Terry Rozier signing with the Charlotte Hornets, a 3-year, $58 million deal for a point guard who 2017-2018 playoffs was where he really made a name for himself. But you look at his averages over the course of the whole season, his averages went down a little bit this year from last year, but we could expect that with Kyrie Irving being relatively healthy for most of the season. But still, you're paying almost $20 million a year to a player who's going to be your starting point guard and has not once over the course of his career even shot 40% from the field. And on top of that, he's not Terry Rozier. I'd say for a point guard, he's a below average playmaker at best. And I don't see how.
It's also the shoes he has to fill. It's Kemba Walker leaving there, and now you're going to bring in Terry Rozier, who isn't the worst replacement. But for that amount of money, for a guy that scored 9 points a game, dishes out 3 assists, it's not the guy that you want to be your floor general. And like you said, he isn't the best playmaker. It's just a lot of money. I think it's a decent signing if you want to just get someone to be you're a point guard, but for that money, it's ridiculous. So I completely agree with you. This would be the one deal, money-wise, that didn't make sense. Because for me, it's another point guard, Ricky Rubio. Really big deal, but I expected that a little bit more than Rozier's money. For me, it's just the fit. Like you were saying with Horford, I just don't like the Suns putting that much money into a guy that would be perfect for a win-now team. A smart point guard.
Hornets.
No, I'm talking about Rubio, me, who would be my guy. Okay. You're going to give that much money to a team that is nowhere near win-now mode, and he is going to dish the ball well. I guess, Devin Booker wasn't really playing a ton of point guard, and when he was dishing the ball out very early. He was still hitting the spots. You don't want him as your point guard. I completely agree. You want him scoring and doing what he does best, and that's why I like Ricky Rubio with him. But for the team as a whole, it just doesn't make a lot of sense to invest that many years and that much money to a guy that I don't believe the Suns are going to be in championship contention in the next 5 years. There's no way. I don't think in 5 years they're going to be a championship contender. I think they can turn their franchise around and not be a poverty franchise anymore. But that's a playoff team. That's the old Suns going against the Lakers. I don't expect them to be a championship contender, a Clippers, a Lakers, any of these kind of teams, I don't see that happening. And with Ricky Rubio, that one was just a big question mark for me with the team. And I know you were talking about Rozier, so I apologize off. But I think both point guards, for different reasons, don't make sense.
So with the Rozier one, you have to look also at the fact that they decided not to give Kemba Walker the Supermax, which I think was the right way to go. Kemba Walker at 6 feet tall, going to be on the wrong side of 30, I believe, at some point in the following year. Players who are that small just don't hold up once they get into their 30s. But it sounded like they could have given Kemba Walker maybe not the Supermax, but even just the normal max, what he would have gotten if he had gone to Boston, or maybe a little bit more, and they would have been able to keep him. If you're going to not pay him because you don't think it's worth it, I just don't see the fit with giving Terry Rozier almost $20 million a year when you could give Kemba Walker an extra $10 million or so per year, maybe $15 million, but then you have a much better player at that position.
They should have dispersed this money and made this team a little deeper.
And to piggyback on what you were talking about with the Suns with Ricky Rubio, the signing of Ricky Rubio in and of itself wasn't a terrible signing, but you couple that with the fact that the Suns traded away TJ Warren,
right.
They gave up draft capital in order to get his contract off their books to what? In order to get Ricky Rubio? They traded away the 6th pick to drop down to the 11th
pick. Yeah, and they ended up getting Cam Johnson, who's already 23 years old, a guy that would have came in and been he's been one of the more NBA-ready guys because he's 23 years old. But you're going to bring a guy like that into this Suns core that doesn't need a NBA-ready guy. They need another piece of this young core, a replacement for Josh Jackson because he was a complete flop. Imagine that, and you continue to build pieces, and you eventually lure a free agent in. That's the process. Now getting Ricky Rubio and spending this much money, it's just you stay stagnant for me. I don't see you're capping yourself. I think you set yourself a ceiling with putting – I would have rather seen the Suns go sign Terry Rozier for 3 years, be committed to less years, and have a guy that I believe is younger than Rubio, and Rozier would have made more sense for the
Rozier,
Suns.
Absolutely.
So this one, it's funny that we're talking about him at the same time. Rozier would have been a great fit with the Suns. That would have been a much better signing for them.
I have one more guy, and Matt, I'm curious what your opinion is with this. I don't think it was an egregious signing by any means. I just think the length of his contract, the DeAndre Jordan signing with the Nets, giving him $10 million for next year, that's fine. I don't have an issue with that, but for the next 4 years, for a player who has historically been a very good defensive player, but last year it wasn't just that his defensive numbers dropped. He averaged just over one block per game. He still rebounded the ball at over 12 rebounds per game. But anyone who watched him play could see he did not put in nearly as much effort last year on the defensive side of the floor as he has in years past. Now, you could make an argument that part of it was because he was on losing franchises and maybe he just didn't care to put in as much effort. But that's something that is a little bit alarming to me.
Alarming.
And on top of that, when you have Jared Allen, who there's no way DeAndre Jordan and Jared Allen can play at the same time on the court. And I would much rather give Jared Allen playing time than DeAndre Jordan. What do you think, Matt?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's a valid point. I mean, you know, it's sort of what we're talking about with Horford and Embiid, you know, playing two big guys. It just sort of, you know, doesn't happen a whole lot anymore. That deal doesn't bother me too much. I mean, I wouldn't say I'm a huge DeAndre Jordan fan, but I mean, he's only making $9-10 million a year. I mean, with where the cap's at now, I mean, it's really not, you know, a debilitating number, especially when, you know, you just maxed out two other guys that are pretty much going to absorb the cap anyway, you know?
Right.
Yeah, that doesn't bother me too much. And going back to your guys' points on those guards, I think with Phoenix, my opinion on that is, you know, they're really committed to developing their young draft picks. You know, Aiden, obviously Booker. And I think Rubio's a guy, you know, being a pass-first guy. I mean, he could be a floor general, make sure that the offense is flowing right and allowing these guys to develop properly. And so, I mean, I think they're putting a lot of stock into that, not as much of, like, having it be a situation where it's like, hey, win now. We got Rubio. He's going to be a game changer. I think it's more of, like, let's create an environment so that our players like playing here and that they're able to develop properly.
Right.
You know, with Rozier and Kemba Walker, I don't know. I mean, I think it's tough to evaluate a guy like Rozier who played on a team with so much depth. I mean, he really didn't get a chance to go, you know. And so, I mean, I see that going either way. I mean, maybe you guys are right in that he's overpaid and he's not going to produce. But maybe with the opportunity, maybe we get a little bit more of like the, you know, Rozier from a couple years ago in the playoffs, you know, because he's got talent.
Yeah, no doubt.
I think that's what I'm, you know, again, sort of curious to see how it plays out, because they, you know, it really could go either way, in my opinion.
Right. So I know I'm talking about another point guard now, Russ Westbrook getting traded to the Rockets for Chris Paul and a flurry of picks. Really interesting trade, and the Rockets, now they're trying to reopen their window. I think they realized, obviously, the contract that they put in to Chris Paul was a doozy, and it made sense for the first few years with them almost going to the championship, almost winning a championship. They were right there, but now the Warriors have now been dethroned, and there's a lot of teams now stepping up to the plate, creating quote-unquote super teams.
Balance across the league, right, for the first time.
But it's super teams when you're really looking at it, because, you know, we never really saw stars like this casually teaming up in the past after LeBron James did it with the Heat. It's now almost a given. You don't sign somewhere and be that guy unless you have someone coming with you. So with the Rockets, Daryl Morey, a very dedicated guy, a guy who is very innovative, and I like him. The Rockets were the first team, I believe, in NBA history to finish a season with more three-pointers than two-pointers. This is a team that is trying something different. You guys were talking about going smaller. That is what they're doing. And they're trying to frontier a lot of different things. So I think now you could talk about the fit for sure, but they reopened their window. And if you're going to ask me, they've given themselves an opportunity now to where they can be interesting in the West next year and the year after. Yes, Russell Westbrook's not the healthiest guy in the world, but when you put him up next to Chris Paul, I'm taking his injury days over Chris Paul any day. And then you put age into consideration, and there's that. So for me, they now have found a way to become exciting again and give Houston hope. But with the fit, I don't know. It's not perfect. Most definitely not.
Do you think they're a legitimate title contender?
For next year, I think if the Clippers and Lakers didn't do what they did, it would have been, let's run it back. There'll be another big team in that West. But the West is so strong now. I don't see the Rockets being more than just a second-round playoff team. Yeah. And that's pretty much right on the money, if you ask me. I believe in what they can do, but against other teams that have now stacked up, I just don't see it being the perfect formula that is what's going to take them over the top, but it definitely reopens their window. Matt, what do you think about this trade in Russell Westbrook, and what do you think about what's next for Chris Paul?
Yeah, no, I mean, it was, the teams, do what Oklahoma City's done. You know, have two max guys that are in their prime and pretty much just do a total rebuild overnight. So from OKC's standpoint, I mean, I think Sam Presti has a lot of confidence in his ability to draft players properly. I mean, you know, he's had a ton of success in drafting, you know, Durant, Harden, Westbrook, Serge Ibaka. I think he's been on himself that he could do it again with all these assets.
Right.
If he's able to draft well, I mean, this turns in, potentially into a really great trade for that organization. Or both those trades, the Paul George trade as well. I mean, with all those draft picks, it's opportunity for, real big upside. Right. With Houston, I mean, sort of what you guys said is, I mean, they're going for it. They opened up the window. They didn't think they had enough to get over the hump, or they obviously didn't get over the hump. CP3 is just getting older. You put Westbrook with Harden. I mean, that is a dynamic combination, and it's going to be exciting, to say the least. I do question the fit. I mean, it's two very ball dominant players. Are they going to be able to coexist? I don't know. I mean, I personally don't like the fit. It doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense to me. I don't really like the depth of their team. I think they're going to be good, but I mean, there's a lot of parity in the league, and I would bet on them not going overly, too far in the playoffs.
No, I agree. The only thing I'm going to put in, though, is if there's any head coach in the league for me that knows how to run with multiple point guards successfully, it's D'Antoni. And Corbin can attest from a guy that said that Harden and Chris Paul wouldn't work at all, the two-point guard system. And yeah, they didn't get over the hump, quote-unquote, but no one expected them to do what they did the last few years. They almost took down the Warriors. They almost did it. So they can figure it out with that system, with D'Antoni, with Morey. I really believe that if there's a system that can figure out to maximize the most success from both of these guys, it's the Rockets. Not saying that that success is going to yield a championship, but for these two guys to coexist again in their career, it had to be on the Rockets with this coaching staff and this flexible of a front office. So for that...
D'Antoni's style is the best style for having guys that
absolutely
that are used to getting a lot of shots. Because I mean, that's the whole idea of the 7 second yeah. offense is like, hey, more shots, more opportunities. So I mean, if it's going to work, D'Antoni's the guy. I think it's a tall task for D'Antoni with these.
Yeah, most definitely.
We'll see.
I agree. And like Perry alluded to, when Chris Paul got traded to the Rockets, I did not think it was going to work. Yeah, they didn't win the championship, but they were a lot more successful than I thought they would be. The Rockets, I think at best they are a second round exit. If they get favorable playoff seeding in the first round, they win the first round. They could be out in the first round too. With that said, regular season, I wouldn't be shocked if the Rockets end up with the one seed in the West. I think if I had to bet who ends up with the one seed, I'd probably go Nuggets one, and then Rockets might be number two, just because the Nuggets are an ideal regular season team that does not scare me at all in the playoffs, because even though Nikola Jokic is great, they just don't have enough premium talent to be a legitimate title contender. But in the regular season, when load management is at a premium now, a higher premium than it's ever been, when injuries occur throughout the year and you have all that depth like the Nuggets do, I think they are going to be the best regular season team, at least in the Western Conference, maybe in the whole league. But it's just such a weird situation where I think they have the best chance to be the number one seed, and they just don't scare me at all. If I'm the Lakers, if I'm the Clippers, even if I'm the Rockets, I'm questioning the fit between Harden and Westbrook, but I'd still probably give the edge to the Rockets over the Nuggets just because of the premium talent that the Rockets have.
The playoff experience that the Rockets have over a team like the Nuggets, who are a lot younger, haven't been as deep in the playoffs. So I'm going to take the Rockets also. If you're going to match them up in the playoffs, give me the Rockets with that one. But like we all kind of just mentioned, it's going to be a tall task. It's going to be tough, but it's not perfect. But we believe it could work, and they at least reopened their window and made it interesting again.
I just think, they'll be a competitive team. They're not going to be a contender. You traded away Chris Paul's contract to...
Good for you. First off, good for you.
Yeah,
that's a tall task. Jesus.
You attached, what, 4 future first-round picks? That's including the 2 pick swaps, and you got back a player who is better than Chris Paul right now. I think you could make a legitimate argument that even though Russell Westbrook is clearly better than Chris Paul, that the Rockets did not get any better by making this trade, just because Chris Paul fits so much better with James Harden than Russell Westbrook did. And on top of that, Russell Westbrook's contract, it's not like that's a great contract either. He's getting paid a ridiculous amount of money for, I believe, the next 4 years instead of Chris Paul just the next 3 years.
But I'll take him
at an even higher annual salary.
And I'll Russell take him Westbrook, at that age, though, and but, with the injury history.
But
I'll take
Russell
that.
Westbrook, even though, Chris Paul's injury history definitely scares me, Russell Westbrook relies so much on his athleticism, so much more than Chris Paul, that by the time Russell Westbrook is Chris Paul's age, I don't think he will be as good of a player as Chris Paul is. Or it'll be very close, which right now at age, if you take Chris Paul's age 30, age 31 season versus Westbrook, Westbrook's clearly the better player. But we started to see Westbrook's athleticism dip a little bit last year, and he had a down year for him.
Yep.
Maybe he'll bounce back. Maybe it's just the start of him declining. We'll see. But yeah, I have real questions with the fit, and I think best case, it's a second round exit.
For him. I think we're all in kind of agreement.
And I actually really agree with what you're saying about Westbrook with the length of the contract and depending on athleticism so much, that really scares me. You know what I mean? And on one hand, it's okay. He's a freak of nature physically, right? So guys
absolutely.
Like that have a better chance of sustaining athleticism. But it's scary because he tears his Achilles. He's probably not coming back the same. And if he doesn't have the explosiveness, he is not even close to the same player. And 2022, I think he's set to make $47 million.
It's
so crazy that numbers are like that nowadays too. 40-something million. You would have talked to anybody a decade ago about that, and no one would have believed you. That is so crazy that we're even touching that number nowadays.
But it's just teams, with the Thunder and the Rockets, when it was time for them to make those decisions on the contracts, they were both in such a bind, because you look at the Rockets last offseason when Chris Paul was a free agent. Okay, you either pay Chris Paul the max, or if you don't, he's going to walk, because someone else probably would have ended up paying him the max or somewhere close to it. But if you end up paying him the max, your window is only going to be open for maybe the next year or two, because you know with Chris Paul's injury history, he's going to start declining at a pretty rapid pace within the next year or two, and then that contract's going to look awful. But if you let him go, it's not like you have the cap room to go out and sign someone else instead, so you kind of just bite the bullet and do
it. They're just reopening their window for the short term. Like, yeah, they did that with Chris Paul, they're doing that again now, and I don't think they're as worried long term.
Daryl Morey
believes he could just figure it out.
I'm just saying it was interesting because the Thunder were in the same position where,
right,
not to as big of an extent as the Rockets because Westbrook was younger, but Westbrook wants the Supermax. Of course you're giving him the Supermax. Right. He's, unlike Kevin Durant, he's the one that stayed. I remember he signed that Supermax on Kevin Durant's birthday. Definitely not just coincidentally. But yeah, you have to do that. But you also know in the back of your mind, yeah, the tail end of this contract is not going to be pretty, but we have to do it.
We have to do it. I think that's the key term right there. I think they have to reopen their window. We're going to talk about Kawhi, Paul George on the Clippers. Of course, Paul George teaming with Russell Westbrook, and it seemed like it was going to be for the long term after the whole fiasco with Paul George. We don't want to talk about that here in this room. Corbin gets triggered, but we are going to talk about something that triggered him even more when we were in Las Vegas for Summer League, and we got the news about Kawhi Leonard going to the Clippers. Not just that, Paul George coming along with him. So the Clippers, they were the team that went from the sublime to the ridiculous. They are now loaded up. They are now not just a contender, but possibly the favorite in the league. So my question for you, Matt, do you believe the Clippers are the favorite? Are you a Laker dude this year? Who is your team? What do you think about the new landscape of the NBA?
It's the new landscape of the NBA. It's exciting. I mean, I think parity is great for the league. You know, I think there's a number of teams that we consider as contenders this next year, which is, you know, the Warriors have really dominated things the last handful of years. And, I'm just really excited just as a fan. Right. You know, see how it all unfolds. With the Clippers and Lakers specifically, both teams just, you know, hit a home run here. I mean, yeah. LeBron James is able to play at the level he has been for the next couple of years. I mean, you know, teaming him up with Anthony Davis, I mean, that's a 1-2 punch. I don't care who you put around him. Like, they have a chance to win every single game they play. And similar, you know, story with the Clippers. I mean, Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, offensively, they're dynamic, but defensively, they're about as versatile as it gets, too. Then you throw Beverly in there. You got, you know, the toughness with Montrezl Harrell. Lou Williams coming off the bench as a scoring punch. I mean, it's a really interesting team. And on top of it, long-term, I love what the Clippers have done with their young guys. And, you know, Jerome Robinson didn't have a good year last year, but I still think he's got a lot of upside. I really like the two kids that they drafted from Florida State, and Terrence Mann and Capengelly. And then the trade with bringing in Landry Shamet. I mean, they've got a lot going on there. I really like the Clippers. You know, maybe for this year, I think go a million different ways, but long term, the Clippers are looking good.
Yes, they are. And in LA, it's really exciting times. You're gonna have two teams like that in Staples Center both playing. Good luck buying a ticket, first off. A ticket to any game is going to be a minimum of $2,000, I feel like. It's going to be ridiculous. So good luck. And good luck finding parking on any day that they decide to do a back-to-back. Because you know they're going to get ballsy. They're going to get ballsy one day and throw the Clippers on in the afternoon and throw the Lakers on at 7:30. And it is going to be a shit show. So don't drive that day. That's going to be our advice for you from Unwrapped. So what's your favorite, Corbin? I just wanted to ask that same kind of question for Lakers, Clippers. Who you think may be your favorite to win it all this year?
I think that the two best teams in the NBA are in LA. It's the Lakers and the Clippers, and it is neck and neck for who is the best. I think that the duo of LeBron James and Anthony Davis is better than Kawhi Leonard and Paul George, and also fits better together.
Agreed.
That's also presuming, look, LeBron James had the worst injury of his career last year. It's presuming he stays healthy, which seems weird that now we have to throw in that caveat, because for so long it was just a granted that granted that he was going to be healthy, but assuming everyone stays healthy on both teams, I would give the slight edge to the Lakers, just the slightest edge that you possibly could, and that's just because both teams have question marks. For the Lakers, defensively, who are you going to have guarding opposing point guards? I guess it's going to be Avery Bradley or Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, but that's not giving me a ton of confidence. For the Clippers, who's going to be the playmaker? Kawhi Leonard's a below-average playmaker, as great as he is, and he is arguably the best player in the NBA. If not, he's top two, top three. He's not a good playmaker for others. He can play make for himself, not for others. Paul George is a decent playmaker. Patrick Beverley is a great point guard, great defensive point guard, but he doesn't really play make. There's rumors that the Clippers are interested in getting Andre Iguodala, but the Grizzlies want a first-round pick for him. I'd be surprised if they get that from anyone. Just Iguodala's on the last leg of his career.
Right.
My question with the Clippers, though, is when they match up with the Lakers, who guards Anthony Davis? Kawhi Leonard and Paul George are going to get theirs. They're going to have good games. LeBron's going to get his, and Kawhi Leonard and Paul George are going to probably take turns guarding LeBron James, especially in a playoff series. It's going to be really tough, tougher than usual for LeBron James. He's still going to get his. He's still going to have good numbers, but they're going to make it tougher for him.
Yeah.
Who's guarding Anthony Davis? Is it Montrezl Harrell, who's going to be a little bit undersized? Or is it, if you stick, my problem with if the Clippers go ahead and try to stick Kawhi Leonard on Anthony Davis is that as great of a perimeter defender that Kawhi Leonard is, he is that, a perimeter defender. Anthony Davis would be able to take him into the post.
And he's going
to
work him on the block.
Yeah, and even, look, Kawhi Leonard's a strong player. He's one of the stronger wings in the NBA. And I'm not saying that Anthony Davis is going to be able to just overpower him, but just getting the position in the first place and being able to shoot over him at 6'10" with a 7'5" wingspan, there's not much that Kawhi Leonard would be able to do. Who else do you want to put on him? Ivica Zubac? Jamichael Green? I just don't see how the Clippers are going to be able to stop Anthony Davis. But I do know it's going to be a really fun series. I'm really hoping that the Lakers and Clippers meet in the playoffs. That would be so much fun.
And again, if you're in LA during that time, please do not drive because you will hate your life. Absolutely. We're going to talk about LeBron and AD with their jersey plan. You know, AD was going to take LeBron's 23 with LeBron going back to 6, which he wore in Miami, but he also wore it for his practice jerseys last year with the Lakers.
In practice, did that pretty much, I think, throughout his whole career.
Yeah, practice he was 6. In the games, he was 23. It's going to be the same thing this year. He's going to be 6 in practice, is 23, because Nike put a stop to LeBron's gift of his jersey number due to production issues. You know, it's a beautiful, beautiful market for jerseys, but it's also very business oriented, and you got to remember that. So yeah, you want to gift it, but when Nike's got a trillion 23 LeBron jerseys chilling in their, you know, manufacturing, it's
$10 million worth of,
yeah, like jerseys. Come on, you know, you got to look at it from that, because I saw some people on social media that were going off about it. You know, Nike, you're such a big company. Like, how can you taking that small of a hit? And I was like, it's small of a hit. It's probably a massive hit. This is the best player, in my opinion, to ever play the game of basketball. And if you want to put MJ there, that's fine. I will not argue with it. But with LeBron, at least right now, you know that's the hottest jersey around, if not one of them. And you're just going to pull it off the market. You have to put, you know, every store is going to have 50% off 23 LeBron jerseys. Well,
but that's the thing, though, is because it would be the hottest jersey on the market if he switched to number 6. There's a lot of Lakers fans who already have number 23. Look, the jersey is going to be a little bit different. Every year since they switched to Nike 2 years ago, Nike does small changes to every team's jerseys. Some are more noticeable than others, but just something in part to make people want to go buy the new jersey.
It's like getting the new iPhone. Like, they're not just going to let you get one. Like, they're going
to
make you.
Look, you had $10 million worth of inventory. If he switches to number 6, I'm curious to see. I know Nike would have done projections on this to estimate how much they would have made if he had done number 6 versus stayed in number 23, and it must have just made sense. Look, you're not switching to number 23 right now.
Yeah, chill.
Because now Nike has the added benefit of people are going to buy the Anthony Davis number 3 jersey, and then assuming Anthony Davis re-signs with the Lakers, which is not a given, he, in different press conferences and interviews with the media, he's had chances to affirm that, yeah, I'm definitely re-signing in LA this offseason, and he hasn't. I think I'm not alarmed about that. I think part of that is just he wants to, rightfully so, keep the pressure on the front office to do everything they can, open. Just to keep him happy and make sure the goal the entire year is winning. Not that I think it wouldn't be if he had committed, but I'm not alarmed by that. But assuming he re-signs, you get the number 23 Anthony Davis jersey next year and the LeBron James number 6 jersey next year as well. Matt, what do you think about all of this?
Yeah, you know, I actually dealt with a similar situation years ago when my partner and I, we represented Ron Artest, and you know, he changed his name to Meta World Peace. He wanted to change his name the year before, and we didn't want him to change his name,
I mean,
for one.
I'm sure.
What we leaned on, yeah, which was the truth, which is similar to this situation, is that, you know, the NBA, the Lakers couldn't control Ron and, you know, tell him he couldn't change his name, but they wouldn't be able to change the back of the name on his jersey for a year. Oh. And so, like, that put him off. And then, you know, we thought we kind of dodged the bullet. He just sort of let it go, the idea go. And then we found out on, I think it was on Hoopsite or something, that he changed his name. It's like, oh, boy. Wow. But, yeah, no, so I don't know all the specifics or, you know, the protocols of how that works, but I do know that there's there's some issues there with, you know, just, you know, switching the jerseys, yeah, overnight, especially for guys that, you know, are selling a lot of jerseys.
Right. So, because I remember Ron Artest ended up changing his name the year after they won the championship. So he was trying to change his name to Meta World Peace the year that he signed with the Lakers.
Right, and if I remember correctly,
huh?
If that's, whatever it was a year later is when he changed it.
Whatever it was the wrong year, so they made him wait. That's, yeah, I mean, we believe you want world peace. It's just, you know, money is money, my friend. So we're going to talk about some more deals. Zion Williamson, who has the potential to be the most transcendent player since LeBron James, who we just talked about, at least the most hyped up player since LeBron James, signs with Jordan. Big deal here. And we were going to throw this one in there too. Darius Garland, another top 10 pick. He signs as well with Nike. So that's a big one right there. I wanted to talk about Zion with Jordan. And this definitely leads back to the NCAA tournament where the shoe blew out, the Nike shoe. And it definitely wasn't a good look. Most definitely not. But I thought at that point, how does Nike recover? What is their plan? And that's to make sure that that kid signs with your shoe, that that was just a freak incident, that he believes in your brand, that it was just a fluke, and that that's the best damage control that you can do. But now after this happens, and Zion didn't go out and blame the shoe, he didn't do anything like that, but at the same time, we all saw it on a huge platform and the shoe exploded. It was one of the most baffling things I've seen. And I, with Corbin, witnessed Zion Williamson rip that ball out of that man's hand on Summer League during his 11 minutes of play. So, yes, I've seen some crazy, crazy stuff from him. But seeing a shoe blow out because a man put so much force on it was probably the second most intimidating thing I've ever watched from Zion Williamson. So, this is a big deal. Jordan comes in, swoops it. MJ, of course, one of the goats of this sport, now is adding a huge name to his arsenal. He needs to put a little bit more effort into how to run a basketball team because he is not doing the best job, if you ask me personally. But at least for his brand, Jordan Brand is Jordan Brand. It always will be. And now to see him continue landing players like this, you got to put him right back up there with Nike and Adidas, who definitely took that front runner spot. And yeah, Puma was the hottest name last year. We understood that, but they're nowhere close. New Balance, nowhere close, even though they're infiltrating. But this definitely now aligns them with Nike and with Adidas for the basketball market with the type of players that they have representing the brand now. You got a guy like Zion up there, you're going to put him right up there because at least within the last 5 to 10 years, Nike and Adidas has made some serious waves while Jordan stayed a bit stagnant.
Well, and Jordan Brand, and then Jordan is part Brand, of Nike,
but,
though.
Right, but it's still, you know what I mean, separate in regards to the players representing each one. And you saw Kawhi leaving Jordan, which wasn't the best look, even though, yes, he's the most confusing superstar in the league. You can't read him. You don't know what his personality is. But still, him leaving that brand wasn't a good move for Jordan. It definitely hurt their brand, and to get a guy like Zion definitely ups it, adds to the modern crowd because a lot of guys our age, a little bit older as well, you know, they're rocking Jordans. It was a very influential brand throughout our life. But for the newer kids, you know, for the younger kids, Jordan hasn't been that relevant. You know, it's not like his team has done anything successful. They didn't have the historic Jays, you know, all that stuff. It's beyond if maybe their dad or older brother or, you know, grandfather was part of it. But
the Jordan brand, a lot of their clients or a lot of their players in the NBA are getting up there in age.
Right,
Carmelo was Jordan brand, right. Chris Paul, I believe Russell Westbrook. There's some other ones too, but yeah,
it's Kawhi was the youngest guy on the roster in regards to superstars. So this is as exciting as it was for Puma last year. When Puma came in and swooped 100 different guys and all of a sudden made their mark again, that was very exciting because they were non-existent in the market, you know, beyond where they were back in the day. And now they just made a new wave. They came back, strong push. But Jordan, like you said, it's still relevant, of course, but a lot of the superstars are a little bit older. They've missed some time, and now they align themselves with the new generation, and I love that. I wanted to get your opinion on that, Matt.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think obviously a big get for Jordan. I mean, you know, Zion's such a likable guy, and you know, being a high flyer, I think he's a, you know, perfect kind of player that's going to sell shoes. You know, I don't think it's been reported what how much they're paying him.
It was 7 years, $75 million.
Wow.
Oh wow, no, that's a good deal. No, I think it's great. I mean, going back to my agent experience, the shoe deals was always pretty interesting. You know, it's generally Nike would sort of set the table as far as what the guy's market is. You know, because most of the players coming out, you know, want Nike. I mean, right. they prefer wearing Nikes or Jordan. And you know, some players will even sacrifice a lot of money to sign with Nike. I mean, it's pretty common. Then other players, you know, don't care. They'll wear, you know, whatever shoe company will pay them the most. I think it's great. I mean, I think, you know, sort of what you guys touched on, you know, I grew up, you know, in the 90s, you know, Jordan was it. I mean, the latest Jordans come out, everybody's lined up outside of Foot Locker, you know, for hours. And it'd be nice to see that come back alive again.
Right. No, seriously. And that's kind of what I meant just in regards to getting hip again, you know, getting the new kids in.
And Matt, you talked about how players historically would give up significant chunks of money to sign with Nike or Jordan brand. That's exactly what Zion, at least reportedly, did. There aren't any reports about what the exact figures were from other companies, but reportedly he could have gotten a lot more money than the $75 million he got from Jordan brand. But he said that it didn't matter to him. He grew up idolizing Michael Jordan, and it's a dream come true for him to wear Jordans on his feet. And when you're making that much money, I mean, the difference between 75 and 85 or 100 million, yeah, there's a difference, but pretty much anything you want to buy, you can get that with 75, and 100 isn't going to make that much of a difference.
Right. He's going to make so much money off endorsements for the rest of his career. I think he's not nickel and diming right now. He's definitely just looking for the brand that is going to help him with his brand, because he's a phenomenon. So
it's also just interesting with how shoe contracts have grown throughout the years. So in 84, when Michael Jordan signed with Nike, it was for 5 years, $2.5 million. 92, damn. Shaq signed with Reebok for $3 million. In 96, Iverson signed with Reebok for 10 years and $50 million. Adidas signed, well, Kobe was the 13th pick in the draft, but on a $5 million deal. And Tracy McGrady got a six-year, $12 million deal. LeBron James, when he signed with Nike, Adidas was supposed to offer him $100 million over 7 years. And Matt, you probably know about this even better than me, but Adidas was supposed to give him 7 years, $100 million. When LeBron James went to go meet with Adidas and get the final offer from them, he still had a meeting set up with Nike. He wasn't going to finalize anything until he met with them. But the CEO of Adidas supposedly got cold feet on the idea of giving an 18-year-old kid $100 million and questioning if he'd be worth that much. And the people who were presenting to LeBron James, the CEO, wasn't a part of that. They didn't know that they were offering less than $100 million until like right before they were meeting with LeBron. And they had already communicated to him that, yeah, it was going to be for $100 million. So by that time, I was reading an article just recently talking about that. And they basically said, like, once we found out we weren't giving him $100 million, we knew we lost. There was nothing we could do about it. And then, yeah, Nike gave him 7 years, $90 million. So Zion's contract, I believe, is the second highest for an incoming rookie of all time behind LeBron's contract.
Okay. So, I mean, I think deserving. Deserving with the hype that he has, it should be.
Yeah, and especially in this day and age, just like I illustrated with the different contracts, the closer it is to the present, the more that people got paid. So, yeah, factoring in all of that, he definitely should be. Maybe you could even say the highest above LeBron, but
I mean, with inflation, I wouldn't have been surprised if you told me that it was higher than LeBron's just because of the fact that it's 2019 now.
Instead of 03.
Which actually kind of shocks me that Zion's is less than LeBron James, which is really...
Speaks to how good LeBron was coming out of high school. Yeah, that's crazy.
So, some news that I loved to see. Tim Duncan will be a Spurs assistant coach under Coach Popovich this season, and I think that's fantastic. Get ready for LaMarcus Aldridge to have a career year with Duncan on the bench. He's really going to tune. I really think he's going to be... I know he's coming towards the twilight of the career. He's still playing at a high level, and I really believe that he's going to get those fundamentals down from Mr. Fundamental himself and extend his career a little bit more, at least extend the end of his prime, you know, right before the twilight phase. So I think this is going to be great for Aldridge. I think this is great for the culture. I love to see it with Pop, with his career dwindling down. Maybe he's trying to find, you know, the next guy, or at least put in another Spurs great right there in the helm. So I really like to see this, and I think it's going to do nothing but help this team. Matt, what do you think about the Tim Duncan joining as the assistant coach?
Oh, I think it's amazing. I mean, for the Spurs, I mean, to get a guy of that caliber, you know, that kind of experience, I mean, it's just, you know, it's amazing. I mean, you know, you got a Hall of Famer that really, you know, really hung his head on you know, fundamentals. And so, if this is the guy that's going to be, you know, with some of your young players that you're developing, I mean, what a huge advantage. You know, I don't know if he has his sights set on being a head coach or not. I mean, it doesn't seem like the right kind of personality to be a head coach.
Yeah.
to have him, you know, as part of your organization, I mean, he's sort of one of those guys where, you know, you give him a blank check and, you know, let him create his own title, you know? And so, I think it's great. I mean, I think I wish there were more guys, you know, superstars that would take this approach and, you know, take assistant coaching jobs and work with guys. And I think it's good for the game.
Yeah, I do as well. The Tim Duncan, reportedly, even after he retired, he was still hanging out in San Antonio and working somewhat with the team, so it's not too surprising, also given his relationship with Greg Popovich. Greg Popovich had a really good quote. I was trying to look for it. I couldn't find the exact quote, but it was basically, it's only fitting that after 19 years of me, Greg Popovich, serving as Tim Duncan's loyal assistant, that he returns the favor.
Yeah,
I loved that quote. And I think, really quickly, on your point about more top NBA players not going into coaching, I think a lot of it is just the top players in the NBA are a different breed, because in order to get that great, you have to just have a sick work ethic where you don't want to do anything besides just train and be the best that you possibly can. And a lot of players in the NBA, they'll train hard, but not to that same extent. And I know Kobe Bryant was very vocal about this when someone had once asked him if he'd ever consider going into coaching after, and he basically said, no chance, because he's going to demand so much from everyone, and when they don't give him what he demands, it's going to drive him absolutely crazy.
Yeah, I think some past superstars as well. It's rare to see a personality like this, Tim Duncan. So a lot of guys don't have the personality to transition to coaching. Like you said, the work ethic doesn't just transfer the same way. And Tim Duncan, who is just such a simple guy, at least it seemed like off the basketball court, but of course on the basketball court, the fundamentals like we keep referring to, it's so perfect for coaching. You know, so it seems so great. And maybe not to be a head coach, like you guys said, because you do need to have that bit of spark and you do need to have that dog inside you, at least to be able to bark, you know, loudly. I don't see Tim Duncan barking. He just shows it with his actions. And I think that he's a results-driven guy that's going to be perfect under any head coach that's looking for championship experience. But I agree with you both when I don't believe that he's got the cojones to, you know, be the head coach for personality-wise, because I don't see him ripping someone's throat out. I don't see him really, you know, going into, I never even saw that fire on the court in regards to, you know, going in a ref's face. And I would consider it respectful as a player, but you need to be able to have that bit of, like I keep saying, dog inside you that's that's different. And not that he's not a competitor, and not that he's not a fantastic basketball mind, because he is, and that's what's going to make him a great coach. But for a head coach, I want a guy that gets me up in the morning. You know, the way he talks, it gives me chills, and I just, not that I'm sure he's a great speaker, but I just don't see him getting in my face and really putting one on me. I don't know. That may just be me not knowing Tim Duncan personally and assuming.
But I think, in fairness to Tim Duncan, look, he's a five-time NBA champion, and on at least three of those titles, you could argue maybe David Robinson was better than him in 99 when they won, and Kawhi was better than him when they won the most recent one in 2014. But on at least three of those five titles, he was the best player on the team. He was the unquestioned leader of the team. So he was able to lead his teammates to a championship.
Right.
Yes, coaching is a little different. Tim Duncan does
have... It was also the best culture that's ever been set in basketball, ever.
Yes, but he also... spent his entire adult NBA life learning that culture. And to speak a little bit about Matt, what you had talked about with... Or it might have been Perry, I forgot, who was talking about the personality with just not having the personality to be an assistant coach. You're right, because most top NBA players, their entire NBA career, they are the alpha. They are the top person at whatever they're doing.
Totally.
They can't transition from that to now they're an assistant below someone else, taking orders from someone else. You look at Jason Kidd. He retired. He got into coaching. Head coach right away. Wasn't even an assistant coach. And I just think it's rare to find someone like Tim Duncan who – it's rare, first of all, to find a top NBA player who even wants to get into coaching after they retire. But then on top of that, to have – pretty much no ego. Like, Tim Duncan does not have an ego.
There is no such thing. Right.
Little to an ego as you could possibly have when you were as good as he was. He is an ideal fit to be an assistant coach. And
right,
I think just in fairness to him, I'm not going to say, look, his personality isn't ideal for an NBA head coach. I could be completely wrong.
No, I'm totally. And that's what I'm saying too. I don't know him personally, but just kind of taking what I've seen throughout the years, I think he was such a perfect fit for that culture. He's going to be a perfect fit for that culture. But if you put him into a place where he has to set his own culture, I don't think we've seen that yet. So, I mean, he most definitely can. He's seen it happen and working as close with Pop. But for me, I just don't know if I can see it go that far. But like you said, for an assistant coach, absolutely perfect.
Yeah, so let's move on to final topic. Actually, two more topics. I wanted to, Matt, talk to you briefly about the NBA deciding to investigate the early free agent agreements between teams and players. Look, we all know it was tampering, but we'll get into that in a second. Really quickly, the Wizards removing the interim tag on Tommy Shepard and becoming the official general manager of the team. He has a lot that he has to sort out. Bradley Beal is up for a extension this offseason. I believe July 26th, he can sign a three-year, $111 million deal.
And today, I believe it was reported, if it wasn't today, it may have been yesterday.
It was yesterday. Yeah. Tommy Shepard jump said, look, I don't think the question was that they were going to extend that offer to him. Of course they were going to. It was, is he going to take it? And that remains to be seen.
Right.
They also have John Wall, who is just entering the first year of a four-year, $180 million contract coming off of a ruptured Achilles.
Yep.
They have a lot of things to figure out. Matt, what do you think about the Wizards deciding to make Tommy Shepard the official general manager, and what do you think he needs to do, at least short-term and long-term, to be successful?
Yeah, well, first of all, Tommy's been a friend for a long time, and I'm just really happy for him. And, you know, he's really paid his dues. I mean, he's worked in the league for a long time, and he's, you know, he's finally getting a shot. So, I mean, I'm rooting for him. I do think he's in a pretty tough spot. I mean, the John Wall contract alone, it's just rough. And there's not a whole lot he can do about that. There's nothing he can do about that, really.
Yep.
But I do think I've been impressed with what he's done so far. I mean, with limited assets to get some stuff going. I like what he did in the draft. I thought taking on Jonathan Simmons' contract, where they really only took on $1 million guaranteed money to get Admiral Schofield the second round, I thought that was terrific.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's a veteran move. You know, and Tommy's, like I said, he's paid his dues and he's learned, you know, learned to and mastered his craft, and that's an example of it. So I think he's got to consistently keep his head on a swivel to maximize his opportunities, because I just don't think it's going to be an easy rebuild of hey, we're just going to sign a couple max guys, and we have all these draft picks. I think it's just going to be more of a chip away type of thing.
Right. Yeah. Do you think that he will be able to move John Wall's contract, or is he just stuck with that?
You know, I mean, I think he'll be stuck with it for at least a while.
Yeah, I agree.
With that injury, you know, it's a pretty tough, you know, obviously a long recovery, but also too, I mean, I think teams will want to see, you know, how he bounces back. To say they're going to be stuck with that contract until, you know, 2023, I don't know if that's necessarily true, but I don't see them being able to unload him now.
Yeah, and with John Wall being so athletic, that Achilles just scares me. So that's going to be tough. A lot of teams are going to be turned off to even take that chance.
It's kind of like what we were talking about with Russell Westbrook, only to a lesser extent. John Wall could do more with less athleticism than Russell Westbrook could. But there was an interesting discussion on The Jump yesterday. They were talking about John Wall and Bradley Beal, and if it would make sense for the Wizards to include Bradley Beal in a trade just to get out of John Wall's contract. Would you do that if you were Tommy Shepard?
Not me personally. I don't want to unload them both unless I'm getting a haul like no other in return.
And
I know
you're just not going to.
And I know you're getting off John Wall's contract, so you're going to have to attach assets, like we're saying. So there's no way that you're going to get in that Chris Paul type of asset haul or Paul George or anything like that. Nothing close. It seems like the going rate now is like 2 to 4 first round picks and then 2 pick swaps in the future. So there's no way that John Wall's in that consideration. You'd be lucky to get, you know, a first and then something else along with that if it's just for John Wall straight up. And that's with attaching Ezekah Zubox and everyone else that you have any value with. I feel like that you would have to do unless you attach someone like Bradley Beal and losing them both.
Thomas Bryant, right?
No. Thomas Bryant. Apologies. So, and
former Lakers center.
Former Lakers center. Sorry, I just keep getting confused with how many bad decisions we made before, you know, recently. But it just seems like a tall task. The Wizards seem like a team that are in purgatory. You know, they have stars on bad contracts. They have decisions that are going to be tough to make, but they have a guy that's making those decisions now. I spoke about this on the NFL podcast we just did because the Texans decided they want to go with a flurry of front office members to be the general manager, to pretty much have a committee, you know, to do general manager. And for me, I don't even see how you run a restaurant without a general manager, without one person that is technically has the last say. It blows my mind. So for the Wizards to finally make that decision, it's really good to see because a lot of these teams, the 76ers, what was it last year with Elton Brand, they went a significant amount of time without an official general manager. A lot of decisions made without a guy that's going to be there for the long run, without a guy that has his job necessarily on the line. Tommy Shepard's going to put his 100% in there. Hearing that he's a friend of yours is awesome. I'm sure you're super happy for him. I'm super happy for him as someone that's watching the NBA and covering it, you know, from an analyst point of view. I really think it's a good move for them, someone that's going to be very dedicated, and he's going to have to make a lot of moves in order to make them successful.
Yeah, Matt, what's your opinion? Would you include Bradley Beal in trade to get rid of John Wall's contract?
You know, I mean, I think it's sort of a loaded question. My first thought is, you combine those two contracts, I mean, you're talking about close to $60 million a year.
So it's going to be tough to find a trade partner.
Yeah, who's going to be able to do that? I mean, for one, is it how do you, you know, I don't know. I just don't see it being realistic. Yeah. A quick knee-jerk reaction, I'd be open to discussing that. I mean, it's just, you're going rebuild mode.
Yeah.
If you're able to get some assets out of it and clear out your books, I'd be open to it. I mean, it's sort of one of those things where, you know, from a philosophical standpoint, being open to hearing, you know, trade offers is different than just committing to trading, you know, Bradley Beal blindly, you know? I don't think he should be an untouchable. I mean, I think there's very few players, if any, that should truly be untouchable, you know?
Totally.
Yeah, you should always be listening regardless of how great the player is. I'd agree with you that Bradley Beal, look, if you're going into a complete rebuild, which is best for this Wizards franchise right now, Bradley Beal, as great of a player as he is, he's not someone who you can, I don't think he can be the number one option on a championship team, and I don't think he is completely irreplaceable. So if you can get rid of John Wall's contract and just hit a complete reset and then probably still end up with maybe one or two good to even better than good assets, I think you probably end up doing that. So, I agree on that point. I want to get out of here on this last topic, the NBA deciding to investigate the what looked like was almost unquestionably tampering from almost every team in the NBA agreeing to deals with players either before the original deadline or the original start of free agency was, or right at the start of it. Do you think that anything's going to come of this, Matt?
You know, I don't know. I mean, it sounds like they're serious about making some changes. The one thing that that's been discussed for years that I'm a big fan of is moving free agency up. I think that makes a ton of sense. I think the draft is really messy with teams not knowing what they have in place.
Oh yeah.
I think teams would be able to make the right choices draft night, you know, more often. If they knew who, if they were able to resign a certain player, bring on a guy, and I think all these teams would be, more organized, structured properly, with free agency being before. As far as the tampering goes, I don't know. I mean, that's going to be a tough thing to regulate.
If everyone's doing, is it tampering? I know you said it was NBA, all teams. At that point, is it just a standard? Like, yeah. If that's what you're going to make it, is it tampering if everyone's doing it? I know that sounds stupid, but is it?
Well, you know, when I first started in the agency business, I think there was a lot more teams were pretty conservative, and I think what's happened is teams are realizing that they're not getting ahead of things; they're behind, and so it's pretty widespread. A lot of these conversations are started between teams and agents at the combine, I think it's one of these things where do they really pump up regulation of it, or do they just kind of make it fair playing ground? I mean, it's actually pretty similar to the idea of what's going on with college basketball. It's just, hey, all this stuff is going on, why don't we just pay these guys legally?
Right.
It's just, there's two ways of looking at it. It just depends on which route you take. I would rather them just sort of just acknowledge that this is going on and just kind of let it be fair playing ground for everybody.
Yeah, I would too. And as a Lakers fan, the Lakers have been dinged for tampering in the past, Magic Johnson, and it was actually Rob Pelinka who got the fine for tampering with Paul George's agent, Aaron Mintz. But I don't have an issue with teams tampering because it happens all the time. And it's not like this was the first year where there was tampering. It's just it was so egregious this year compared to years prior, and no one was really saying anything. I don't have an issue with it, just accept it. There was a quote, I forgot who said it, but regarding the free agency and the tampering, that basically, look, if you're not tampering, you're behind, because if you're on a freeway and everyone else is speeding and you speed too, are you really breaking the law, or are you just going with the flow of traffic?
Right.
And so you see all these other teams tampering. If you don't tamper, you're behind the eight ball. Players that you might want are coming to terms on deals that maybe you could have beaten, but if you really want to be goody two shoes and just wait, not talk to anyone until you're legally supposed to, you're going to lose out. So I don't have an issue with that. There were some people who wanted the free agency brought up to like right after the finals ends. I think that's a little too soon. Let's give whoever wins the championship a little bit of time to celebrate before the players on that team even have to decide, am I staying here? Am I going somewhere else?
Exactly. You got to let it settle too. Because once you spend a week after winning a championship and you get treated like a king, your opinion on the Toronto Raptors may have changed
from
before that. Marc Gasol or someone like that. Maybe actually sitting there and accepting that, you won a championship here, you're loved in the city. That may be different than maybe right when it ends, you got to make a decision. You may go off, just the money, and you may not let those feelings settle. And there may be a lot more Morris decisions where, he spurned the Spurs and went to the Knicks. There'll be a lot of, I changed my mind because you made me think so quickly.
Yeah. Two last points for me, and then Matt, if you have anything else to add, we'll end on that. The first one with the, if it was right after the championship ended, it's also not fair to the fans. Think about the Toronto Raptors fans this year who finally got to experience their team winning a championship for the first time ever in their lives.
And then Kawhi.
If Kawhi Leonard, the day after free agency starts, you don't get to enjoy him being at the parade and celebrating. So we can move it up, but just not completely. And the other point on this was the tampering, whatever they end up investigating into, there's a report that some owners were asked if they would be willing to turn over their cell phones and their servers. No, they're never going to do that.
What?
They're never going to do that. And the worst that's going to come out of this, I think, is just some fines to different owners and general managers. Yeah. It's the NBA could technically revoke contracts or take draft picks moving forward away from teams who tampered. That's not happening.
If they're making me turn my phone in, I'm a general manager, I'm going to the quickest Radio Shack, buying a burner phone. I will find Anthony Davis's number and I will contact him over and over again on a number you cannot trace. You know, if you really want the GMs to get shifty, yeah, they will. But like, you might as well, like you said, Matt, if you're going to have these kids come in and pay them legally. You know, why don't you just let these guys do it legally? Like, why don't we all just make the rules to where we all just agree and stop just, you know, having this pink elephant in the room where we all clearly know it's happening, but it's not. Matt, is there anything you wanted to add before we sign off today?
Well, yeah, you know, the one thing, I mean, just kind of, you know, piggybacking what you guys are saying is that, you know, with these tampering, I mean, most of the dialogue is going on with, you know, front offices and the agents. And there's so much, I mean, for most agents that represent, you know, multiple players, you're dealing with all the teams on something, you know, and so I just don't see it being a big issue if you've got a pending free agent for agents and teams to discuss things hypothetically. It's just, I don't know, again, I'm being a little bit repetitive here, but I think they should just sort of like, you know, tear down some of the red tape.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. It's the same thing with like when person who works in the front office or an owner isn't allowed to talk about how they're going to try to go after a player in the upcoming offseason. Okay, well, like 2 years ago, or last offseason when LeBron was going to be a free agent, Lakers had all of this cap room, couldn't say anything about it, but what, did LeBron not know that they were going to try to go after him just because they didn't say anything about it? They were talking about it privately. It just, it seems a little archaic now, especially in this day and age with all the social media. Just, we need to move forward and find a better resolution to it.
Yeah, completely.
Yeah, so, all right. Well, Matt, thank you so much for joining us on this week's episode of NBA Unwrapped. Had a great time talking with you. You obviously know tons and tons about sports and about the NBA. I really enjoyed our conversation, Perry. Same thing with you.
Yeah,
always fun.
Yeah, Matt, thanks. I know Corbin mentioned it. Thank you so much. You know, your expertise is very appreciated here. We really hope that we can keep the relationship strong and maybe have you on again in the future. It was such a pleasure having this interview with you. I know our listeners are going to have such a great time listening.
No, of course. Yeah, thanks, guys. I really appreciate it. And I'm happy to come on, you know, whatever. Just let me know.
Yeah, thank you. So thank you guys all for listening to NBA Unwrapped, where we unwrap the hottest takes from around the NBA. I'm Corbin Weinerman, joined by Perry Aston and Matt Babcock. Thank you guys both so much for making this episode so great. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at NBA Unwrapped. You can follow me on Twitter at Corbin Unwrapped. Follow Perry on Twitter at Perry Aston Unwrapped. And you can follow Matt on Twitter at Matt Babcock 11. So thank you guys, and hope you guys tune in next time.